Okay, are we ready to go? Okay. So before, again, just before we get started, was there anything in particular in chapter 18 that maybe y'all had any questions about or didn't get gone over sufficiently? The visitors? Okay. Well, the same that are here in chapter 19, so I'll allow it because they are still in the story here in chapter 19. All right, so interestingly, well, I guess, where does it say three? Where does it? In chapter 18, that's interesting. In chapter 18, in verse 2, it says three men were standing in front of Abraham, but in chapter 19, two angels came to Sodom in the evening. Okay. Okay. Yeah, she's sitting close enough, the mic will pick her up. Sometimes. With there being three. Okay, see that. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. Unfortunately, we just can't know with any certainty. But that's it's an interesting conjecture. Yeah, the recordings almost probably 90% of the time at least get put up on the website. All the audio of every lesson, both Bible class and sermons, are on the website. All right, so yeah, chapter 18, there are three, and then chapter 18, there are two. Certainly, it's a possibility that one of them stays behind with Abraham. And then in chapter two, you have these angels that are there in Sodom, and I certainly could see at least one of them as being the destroyer. There seems to be a specific destroyer angel whose job it is to bring judgment and destruction. Certainly, we also see that in the Passover. I think we see that with the 185,000 Assyrians that are struck down in a single night. So, certainly, that could be the case here with at least one of these. But again, we cannot know with any certainty who exactly they are. But other than the fact that it just simply says two angels came to Sodom in the evening. Okay. And so here we are in the beginning of chapter 19, and the thing that I find interesting is right there in verse 1, it says that Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. What right away does that tell us about Lot and how his situation has changed since the last time we saw him back in, what, chapter 14? Exactly. Exactly. In chapter 14, and whenever he departs from Abraham, he is living in the valley, right? Outside of the city. Well, now he's moved all the way inside the city. And what would that possibly suggest about him? Yeah, he seems to be attracted to the city lifestyle, right? He seems to be attracted to maybe the wealth that is and comforts that are afforded living in the city. And certainly he was a wealthy man before he got there. And you know, who knows? Maybe he decided to just sell everything and retire and you know, just live in the city, bought himself a nice house. I don't know. But that certainly is, there's a contrast there with Abraham, right? Because we know that Abraham continued to dwell outside of the city, to be a sojourner, to consider himself to be an alien and a stranger, and to dwell in tents. And now we see Lot, quite the opposite of that, settling down, kind of finding himself a place as a citizen of that city. Absolutely, yeah. At the gate, that would have indicated an elder-type position in the city. Yeah, absolutely. And so he's moved, right? And I have a whole sermon on that. we can start here and we can move a little closer, a little closer, a little closer as we get more comfortable with the world and the things in it until we all of a sudden find ourselves in a place where we never realized or expected or wanted to be, and we make justifications for it. And I think that's a lot of what we see here with Lot. Now, it doesn't seem to have totally ruined him. I mean, he's still, I think some of what we see here is that he is still a man of righteousness to some extent. Right? I mean, that's why God saves him. If he wasn't, God would not have saved him in this situation. He obviously is bothered by the wickedness of the men of the city. And also, the other thing that we see in this kind of question number one, right, what do we see Lot doing for these angels who are in the form of men, whether he knows if there's anything different about them, kind of like Abraham did in the previous chapter or not, you know, I'm not sure. But what is his actions toward them? Yeah, exactly. He invites them into his home, and at first, you know, they say no. But he pressed them strongly, it says in verse 3. So they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he made them a feast. And exactly. I think that suggests that he knew exactly what was going to happen to them if they stayed outside in the city square. He feared for their safety. He feared for their lives. And so that's why he pressed them so strongly. Now, if it had just been, if he had, you know, invited them, that had been one thing, and a good thing, right? That he's showing them hospitality. And so in some ways, we see that he is still displaying some of the righteous characteristics of his uncle Abraham that raised him, still continuing on those things that he was probably taught, to show hospitality to strangers. And that's a very good thing. He demonstrates hospitality and righteousness here in this instance. But I think the fact that he pressed them so strongly indicates that he had a very good inkling of what was going to happen to them if they stayed outside. Clint? Not that I can think of. I mean, he offered him that choice, right? Back when they separated, he said, if you go to the left, I'll go to the right, vice versa. And Lot saw Sodom, and that's what he chose. Yeah, I mean, so he sees the well-watered valley in the greenness of it, and that's what led him to choose. He's like, well, I'm going to take the best for myself. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, who knows what kind of warning might have gone on there, but obviously I think over time what happens is, okay, you're dwelling in this valley, you're near the city, you start trading in the city, you start saying, well, it'd be a whole lot more convenient if we could just live in the city. And so then you find yourself there, and then over time she raises her family there, and she develops all these connections. And she obviously was very attached to the life that she had there. I think that's evidenced by the fact that when they leave, she turns and looks back, and we'll maybe talk a little bit about that in a bit.
Didn't he know
You would, I don't know, I don't know. Well, at some point, we don't know what kind of conversation might have gone on there that it's not recorded, but at some point, if Lot's an adult, he kind of has to let him make his own decisions. I don't know. Okay, Tim, did you have your hand up? Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting to me that after what happens in the events in chapter 14, that he's still there, right? He already got caught up in you know, a bunch of trouble once, and yet he continues to live there even after he's rescued the first time. Maybe a little bit of a lack of wisdom there, I don't know, but I guess that kind of a thing could have technically happened anywhere as far as the, you know, getting caught up in a war. But in any case, we find him here doing his thing. And he knows exactly what the men of the city are going to do. And so we move on down in the story. And so what then happens after that? After he brings them into his home. Okay, so go ahead. Yeah, it's everybody. It's literally everybody. And I don't know how many people were living in this city, but that's exactly what it says. It says, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, and all the people to the last man surrounded the house. So, I mean, they're literally under siege, and they're banging on the door and saying, bring them out to us so that we may know them. And so, obviously, we know exactly what's going on here. There's no beating around the bush. You know, they... Yeah, I mean, they wanted to homosexually rape them. That's exactly what they wanted to do. And that shows the absolute, as Amber said, the absolute depravity of the entirety of the city. And Lot says, you don't do this wickedness, right? And he says, I beg you, verse 7, I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. And then he offers up his two daughters, his two virgin daughters, to them instead. He says, here, take them, and do to them as you please, only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof. But they said, stand back. And they said, this fellow came to sojourn, and he has become the judge, and now we will deal worse with you than with them. All right, so there's a lot kind of to unpack there. So I guess we're trying to take it one thing at a time. The first thing is, he calls them brothers. Right, I think there's some irony here in the fact that he calls them brothers. What might that suggest? Exactly. In my opinion, it suggests that he is way too friendly. He knows these guys. He knows who they are. He's risen to some sort of possibly prominent position within the city. He has a kinship with them. And he, for whatever reason, has just grown very comfortable. And then you turn that around, and the irony is then what? What do they call him in response? They call him a foreigner or a sojourner. Because this fellow, he's like, not brother, this fellow, this guy, who is this guy that comes in here to sojourn? He's not one of us. And now he's going to judge us? Like, how dare you judge me when, you know, you're not one of us. Like, you can have your own morals, but we're going to have ours, kind of a thing. And so there's just a lot of irony here in how comfortable he's gotten, and yet how they still see him as the outcast. And so, again, what does that say about us? Yeah, and I think all too often we, as Christians, like end up being way too comfortable with the world, but then they still see us as the outcast, you know. And we want that as humans; it's natural to want that acceptance, to want to belong, and that's exactly the story that we see here. Yeah, yeah, and they don't even want him. That's what's crazy about it. And so then that's the thing. How do we understand his offering of his daughters in this situation? Okay.
He's just saying that, but he knows.
Yeah, possibly. Number one, I think it does it shows us that in Lot's mind, the sin of homosexual gang rape is worse than, you know, yeah. So that's one thing that I think he's probably not wrong. I mean, I know we talk about, oh, well, you know, sin is all the same, but I think you kind of see some stories like this throughout the Bible that show, you know, certain things God comes down a lot more harshly on, at least in the terms of on the earth, than others. I mean, here you have an entire city that is literally burned to the ground because of this. So I think that says something.
The Bible calls it unnatural.
Right.
So it's not only sin, but it's unnatural.
Yeah. So there's that aspect of it, but go ahead. Yeah, it could show, and some argue that for sure that this kind of shows a lack of a proper view of women that would have been prevalent at the time. I suppose that's possible. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and so you have some cultural considerations here that would have been very different than what we're used to. And so I think those are all valid. The other thing I would say is I'm kind of on board with Celeste here. I think that he's just bluffing. I mean, he just knows they're not going to accept this offer.
Then why give it? Why say it? It is a father.
I know. I don't get it either.
God
Yeah, I mean, apparently, culturally at least, in that situation, his first duty would have been to protect the stranger. Why that's above his own daughters, I don't know. Right, so let me read what the ESV says here, because they don't try and defend him at all. Okay, so here's what they say. Lot's readiness to protect the two men from the mob is commendable. In desperation, he offers his two unmarried daughters as substitutes. A shocking, cowardly, and inexcusable act, even if he intended this only as a bluff or expected the offer to be rejected. And then the reaction of the crowd only confirms the truly evil nature of their intentions. So, I mean, they just make no attempt to defend him whatsoever in this. But again, even righteous people can make mistakes. And I think that in that situation, we put your own self in that situation where you are literally under, your house is under siege, and there's no way that you can physically defend yourself, and you're just trying to say literally anything to try and defuse the situation, and that's just what comes out of his mouth. Still wrong, but that's just what comes out of his mouth. Does that make him not a righteous person because he makes that one mistake? No, because we see other righteous people make mistakes throughout Scripture, and they're still considered righteous. Yeah. Right. So, let me also offer a little bit of what was it Platt or Pratt, or whatever his name is, says here. See, this such an incredibly horrible offer seems indefensible. In what way was this any better than what the men themselves had proposed? That Lot would make such an offer shows how incredibly terrible he viewed the unnatural intercourse of homosexuality. He views this as a way to protect the visitors who came under his hospitality. One wonders if another motivation was a false belief that abusing a woman is somehow not as bad as abusing a man, so there's that aspect of it. Yet, blah, blah, blah. And of course, he also references a similar event in Judges chapter 19 and verse 24. And of course, in that case, the woman ends up being raped and killed and cut into pieces. Gotta love Judges. Nevertheless, he says, I see no way to justify Lot's conduct. Offering a different evil instead of the one people propose is no solution. We ought to oppose any and all wrongs. And never propose them. On the other hand, he says the fact that they were at least still virgins speaks well for Lot as a father, protecting them up to that point in their lives. So I don't know. I would love to answer your question, Darren, but that's about as good as I can do. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I get it. Is it 19? Yeah. Well, yeah, he probably had some sort of idea
during this dinner, these are
of who they were. Their presence would have been, I think, unmistakable, that these are not normal men.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that had
That probably is something to do with the length to which he went. He felt he needed to go to protect them.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately that happens, right? Sometimes we just make bad calls. Yeah. All right. So the other thing, I was just kind of going back to this idea of, just real quickly, them saying that he has become the judge. And Pratt says it's interesting the evil Sodomites use the same reason to reject Lot's rebuke that people do today. You're acting like a judge. You have no right. Don't you know the Bible says judge not? Such logic is used today to discourage opposition to any kind of error. Yet those who make such arguments are using the same logic as these evil men in the story of Lot. We have every right to judge conduct to be sinful and to urge people not to participate in it when the Bible shows that it is sinful. And in fact, God requires us to do so. Again, doesn't mean that we are determining people's eternal destinies. That's God's job, not ours. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a right to say, hey, look, here's God's word says this is wrong. All right? Okay, moving on. So the angels had come into Sodom, and so what was their entire purpose in coming into the city? Okay, well, two. All right, I'll give you both. There's two. Number one, to see if the outcry against the city was correct, and therefore it needed destruction, and to carry out that destruction. And number two, to rescue Lot from that destruction. And so they come into the city to do that. I think it's interesting that the scripture puts it this way. And again, this goes back to chapter 18, where it says there, you know, where does it say? Verse, what, 20 of chapter 18? Yeah, that sounds right. 20. Yeah, I mean, this whole discussion with Abraham, you know, hey, are you going to judge it if I find still some righteous people there. Verse 21, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me, and if not, I will know. So he's, you know, God's going to go and investigate. And, you know, I find that really kind of odd because you're like, well, how does God not know? So what do we think about that? And I'm reminded also of the Tower of Babel incident. Well, let me go down and see. Well, does God really need to go down and see? No, I think it's more about for us to know that God is a righteous judge, and he is not going to make these sorts of judgments or destructions without it being necessary, without it being the right decision. And so it's giving us an opportunity in this narrative to go in and see and get that firsthand look and see just how bad it really is to understand that, yeah, this was necessary and God is being righteous in his judgment in this instance. Yeah, God's not doing this half-heartedly or you know, without great sadness, right? And so he's going in to see if their wickedness was complete. And again, I kind of see that in the same way along the lines of later with the Canaanites, right? You know, it says, well, you know, the wickedness of the Amorites is not yet complete. So he's waiting. God waits. He waits in judgment until people are just all too far gone. There's no one left to be saved, and that's what we see here, right? That Abraham's having this discussion. Well, hey, what if there's, you know, 10 left? What, you know, then will you spare this? Yeah, I'll spare it. No, God waits until there's just no one left that has any chance of turning from their wickedness before he destroys. And so this is a confirmation. And then this whole episode, everything that we see them doing to Lot, trying to do to these men, is confirmation that they did indeed deserve this punishment. And I think, again, that's what the ESV says in here. It says, by acting so wickedly against defenseless strangers, the entire community invites divine punishment. Right? They invite divine punishment as a whole. I think it's indicative of the fact that, as Amber pointed out earlier, back in verse 4, that the entirety of the men of the city, young and old, all to the last man, came to the house. And so that shows you, yes, this entire city is indeed worthy of destruction. And that's what's coming. Okay, so what then did the angels warn Lot to do? Okay, get your family and get out. Right? And what does Lot do? Okay, yeah, so he tries to get out, but, he tries to warn them, his sons-in-law, or about-to-be sons-in-law, depending on how you understand it, seem that they just think he's just joking. You can't be serious. And again, I think that tells us a little bit of something about them, that they must have been from there. You know, they had the same kind of attitudes, no, destruction couldn't possibly be coming. And so they just think, oh, Lot's just crazy. And so, and again, as far as them being betrothed, it calls them sons-in-laws, and yet his daughters are virgins. So it does seem that they are considered as family because they're betrothed, even though that the marriage hasn't taken place yet. That's what it seems like, as would have been the case with Mary and Joseph, right? Okay, so then, finally, they delay, and then what happens? Okay. Yeah, you got to get out, right? You have to get out. So they take them by the hands and pull them out of the city by force. And it's interesting that it says there that the Lord, in verse 16, being merciful to him, brought him out and set him outside the city. So multiple times here in this story, we see the mercy of God towards Lot and his family. And I find that very interesting, that the Bible goes very far to point out the mercy of God in the midst of the judgment and destruction of God, right? God is not just out there to get everyone. His character is not just punishment upon the wicked, but that it is right, right? There is right and there is wrong, and God is going to not only punish the wicked, but he is also equally going to save the righteous. And that comes up multiple times. Again, Pratt says, God does not punish the righteous with the wicked, but warns people even today to flee from sin and avoid the punishment that will surely come on the wicked. If they refuse to flee, then they clearly deserve to be punished. Yet God has given them a chance. And this is why we today must likewise teach all the lost. And again, it says there very specifically in verse 16, the Lord being merciful to him. Lot is lingering, right? He doesn't want to leave. He is delaying. And God is just sitting here giving him every chance to get out, waiting on him, sending these angels, trying to convince him. And it's going to happen again. Because what's the next thing that Lot's going to do? Once he's finally they pull him out of the city, and then what's the conversation that happens? Okay, he tells him not to look back. He tells him to flee unto what?
The mountain.
And then what does Lot say? Oh, no, 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 I can't go into the mountains. It's too far, or it's too dangerous. Or, you know, he says, lest evil overtake me. Like, what evil he thought was going to overtake him in the mountains? Yeah, I don't know. Like, did he think people are going to follow him there? Did he think that, like, wild animals were going to attack him? I don't know. But he clearly is not comfortable living outside the city anymore. And so he begs to go to this other city, this little city, which then ends up being named Zoar, which means little, and God, being merciful to him, grants that request as well. God didn't have to do that. He just said, no, do what I told you to do, like we all do as parents to our kids. No, do what I told you to do. God says, okay, fine. That's where you wanted to go. And then, ironically, then we're going to see later on, he ends up dwelling in the mountain, dwelling in the hills. Anyway, but we'll talk about that next week because we're out of time. And we'll finish up the second section, the second unseemly section of this chapter next week that is unseemly on an entirely different level. Okay, thank you very much. Not next week, 2 weeks.